Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Monday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am Craig Fowler and I'm joined in person once again by Ewan Taylor.
Hello.
And Tony Anderson.
Hi, Craig.
Hi, Tony. Tony, sum up the feelings of Scottish football fans right now after this week 35 action.
It's done. It's over. Everyone stop. Everyone stop watching. Everyone stop listening, actually.
Don't do that.
The worst bit about it was, this is the weekend that killed the whole season. That's killed the season stone dead. And it was done in the most boring fashion. There was no topsy-turvy games or anything like that. So everything's finished and it was done in the most bland way possible. With a couple of 1-0s.
It must be the worst week of Scottish Premiership action of all time.
Yeah, I think, especially for what it's done now. Because it's also killed the season and it was done in that. I'm up for that. Yeah. The worst weekend in Scottish football history.
There is still a three-way battle, though, between...
For the pointless European place. Yes, you have to go into the first quarter round of the conference.
For two teams to make it in, which means that at least one of the teams will be like the worst Scottish team to make it to Europe since we allowed teams that finished runner-up in cup finals to get into Europe. So since Queen of the South get to Europe after
I
the...
I believe that Gretna did.
Gretna did. Yeah. So Queen of the South didn't, and certainly since Gretna. Yeah.
I think Queen of the South did, actually, yeah.
Because... Even Motherwell, County fans less so, because they obviously have been pretty decent since their terrible start, but Motherwell and Dundee United fans are just continuously saying, how are we going to maybe get into Europe? This is wild. Oh. We're so bad.
I mean, Motherwell are fucking atrocious.
Yeah. They might be the worst top six team of all time.
Yeah, there's a lot of all-timers here. Absolutely.
it's a legendary season. But yeah, I mean, yeah, that game was horrendous, as were all the other ones, I think, apart from maybe one. It's remarkable that Motherwell have finished top six.
But the most interesting game of the weekend has to be the Old Firm / Glasgow Derby, depending on your sense of humour. Uh-huh. And
that or understand their company law, but I can't.
We finished 1-1 between Celtic and Rangers at Celtic Park. I think a bit of, well, especially regret on Rangers' side because they had the opportunity to bring it down to 3 points and ask questions of Celtic's bottle in the last 3 weeks of the season. Probably still wouldn't have happened because there doesn't seem to be anybody that I mean, realistically, they'd be hoping for Hearts to take points off of Celtic, and since the match is at Celtic Park, that's still going to happen.
Yeah, and even that wouldn't be enough. I mean, that was the thing.
Yeah, you need them to drop points again, really.
To the aforementioned Motherwell or Dundee United.
Or Ross County. No, they've already beat Ross County.
They've already beat Ross County. Sorry, the hardest test has already been out of the way.
Yes. So there was no chance, even if Rangers had won yesterday, the league was done.
But in terms of winning the match, there was regrets on both sides. Celtic should have added to their one goal advantage, and then Rangers should have won it after bringing it back to one each.
I think Celtic, Rangers started pretty well, had the good chance that Kent had, and then obviously Jota scores a pretty similar chance for Celtic. After that, there's a couple of decent chances that Celtic have.
Rangers, well, I thought you were going to say a similar chance to the one that Abada scored.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was very similar. Yeah, I know.
Abada's just didn't take a knee this time.
He's all for racial equality.
Yeah.
So much so that he would like to do it during the game.
No, he stayed upright this time. But yeah, it's a bit of an issue. But I do think both Jota and Abada's runs are very good, and I do think that's quite difficult to defend. But Barisic's body position's all wrong both times, and it's obviously just something that he is prone to doing. Because this time, I mean, the Abada one, it was like he had no idea he was there, which was dreadful. But this one, he knew Jota was there, and he still couldn't react to it, which is not great either. He's not really comfortable defending in those sort of central areas, but the way Celtic set up with that sort of out 10 runs, it's quite difficult to defend, and it drags Barisic into areas that he's not comfortable in, and it's obviously led to two goals.
I think the Maeda on the left hand side, obviously creating the goal with a great cross. I think you just saw the game encapsulated Maeda as a player. Everything, all the things that were good, I thought, like tactically, it was really good. He sort of stifled Tavernier for the whole 90 minutes, which is a brilliant thing to do, because obviously Tavernier's one of the most dangerous players in the country. And obviously you've seen his work great there, and then the delivery for the goal is great, and then you see the lack of composure at the chances, because I mean he had two great chances and he fluffs his lines, let's be honest. So it's like everything about that player, I think, we just saw in that 90 minutes of what he's good at and what he's lacking, and it's essentially why he cannot play centre forward because he just doesn't have the composure to play that role. But out wide, He's a very, very handy player for Celtic to have.
Did he shite it out of that header, though?
Yeah, he did. Absolutely did. Right. Yeah, McGregor did probably quite well. I mean, he ventured off his...
He is the angriest man in Scottish football running at you, so I can understand why.
Yeah, I mean, there's every chance that's ending a concussion for Maeda. McGregor did all right. I mean, I thought the other chance, Maeda was miles offside, as he was in the... I've just got my tinfoil hat on here. but as he was in the Scottish Cup semi-final as well, when he passed it to Hatate, who missed a good chance in that game. It's bizarre, but he's actually been about 3 or 4 yards offside for two chances in the last two games. I don't know what's going on. The linesmen don't seem to notice that he is offside.
He also got stung at the end when Carter Vickers was lying on the floor.
Tony, thank you for bringing that up.
I'm just reading it now. I'm not.
I mean, I understand. Offside is very difficult. It's possibly physically impossible to actually tell if a player is offside if people are moving. You know, you've got to look at three different things at the same time. But when one of the three things you've got to look at is prone,
stone dead,
it does make it slightly easier to work out if someone's offside or not. I mean, I think Sakala had made an arse of it anyway, to be fair, but that was a baffling decision. Now we're bringing VAR in, of course. Won't have any of these issues. Suspect it'll lead to the title comeback to Ibrox.
Seems
to be the belief of the vast majority of the Rangers support.
I wanted to ask you about, obviously, Stephen Davis got a start, and he's been, as I think we mentioned a wee bit briefly last week, Brian Van Bronckhorst kind of has his favourites, and he's very much like sort of keeping the most regular 11 possible, and me and you agreed that maybe led to the problems with Morelos fitness-wise. But Stephen Davis, he actually brought in. Do you feel that there is... I know it's kind of been forced on him a bit, but do you feel Van Bronckhorst is starting to grow into sort of enjoying more of his squad?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's getting more out of players that maybe probably hadn't been trusted in games. So, you could say Sakala over the last few games, right, has come, you know, and done pretty well. And then, yeah, I think he does quite like Davis. Davis had sort of fitness and I think he got COVID as well. So there was chat that there's sort of been mixed feelings because I think a lot of Rangers fans just think Stephen Davis walks on water, so should be in the team at all times. Oh. And it's been a bit of a stick to beat Van Bronckhorst with that he's not been in the team more, but it's not that clear how available he's been. I think he did all right yesterday. I don't think he's as good a midfielder as Ryan Jack is now, or Lundstrom, so I wouldn't have him starting too many games, but he is a rotation option and he could definitely sort of take, you know, minutes off of Jack and Lundstrom, you know, in this sort of busy period.
No, I totally agree with that, because I think there was it Sutton or Hart, someone was on the telly and lost their shit about David, not Boyd, sorry, Chris Boyd, and he was talking about Davis not playing, and it was really like, he was really pushing it and he wouldn't sharp. He'd done it pre-match, then at halftime, and at the end of the game. And I was like, and I was like, I thought it was going a bit far, because I agree that I think Davis should have had more minutes,
yeah.
But it's, I think everyone's ignoring that at the start of the season, Davis is quite shit.
He was.
And we can't, yeah, you can't just ignore that. And I'm saying, I think I'm totally with you. I think he should be used as a rotation option now, but he probably isn't a sort of go-to first 11 player anymore.
No.
There's a middle ground between how Van Bronckhorst has been treating him and what Chris Boyd wants.
Yeah. He didn't, because he started the first Van Bronckhorst game, the Sparta Prague game, and he did okay, but not brilliant. And then, I mean, I think the last league game he started until recently was the Hibs, the game that Roof scored the penalty late on, sort of start of December, and he didn't have play well at all that day. And that was the sort of, I think you need a bit more, you need more legs to play in the way Van Bronckhorst has the midfield set up than the way Gerrard did, because it was that midfield three and you know, the two sort of shuttling ones at the side did a lot of the running, and Davis could sort of get away with just almost anticipating where the ball was going to drop, and he very good at sort of picking up interceptions and stuff. But Europe was a big problem because with Davis, because people can run off him quite easily. He just doesn't quite have the physicality at that level, and I think you can see the difference that Lundstrom's made to us in those types of games, and I would say Celtic games are probably quite similar. So, you know, I would have rested a lot more players than the Van Bronckhorst did yesterday. But Davis was an obvious option. He's not going to completely let you down in a game like that. And I thought he did all right. But yeah, I don't think he'll start on Thursday.
One question I've got is, so Celtic obviously hammered Rangers at Celtic Park in January. They then rebound surprisingly easily from an early setback at Ibrox to win that game. I kind of thought that Celtic and Ange Postecoglou had Rangers' number, and or at least had the number of Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, but in the last two games, Rangers won, and deservedly so, won a semi-final at Hampden, and then in this game, they could have, Fashion Sakala doesn't fluff his chance late on, the win at Celtic Park as well. What's changed the last couple of games?
Tactical approach is quite different. So we're pressing up a lot higher. We've sort of stopped them playing out at the back. I mean, in this game, I think it was clear that we were letting Starfelt have the ball, and because he's probably the weakest on the ball of all Celtic's
players.
Yeah,
yeah. I think the
Joe Hart.
There was other problems as well. Tony Ralston.
Tony Ralston
again, kind of didn't look as comfortable as the players he's replacing in that inverted fullback role.
Yeah. He's just not as good a footballer as Jurinovic. So there's that. And yeah, we've sort of restricted Celtic's outballs quite well both games. I think the personnel, since if you go back to the February game, you know, Lundstrom wasn't in the team at that time, and I think he makes a big difference. He was in the team for the game at Ibrox, but that's where Rangers lost the league, was that game. The Ibrox game, you know, if Rangers won that, then you know, we're level on points at the moment. Celtic would still have the goal difference advantage, but it would be tight. That was where we lost it, and that game really could have gone either way. I thought Celtic did well, but second half they were really defensive. They were just sitting in, and Rangers.
Till the time I've seen Celtic do that this season.
Yeah, and I think we sort of bottled it. To be honest, we played in a sort of a bit of a cowardly way, in that we were just like not really taking risks and just putting loads and loads and loads of crosses in.
Could you say it like, because like Carter Vickers and Starkville, that was sort of like their greatest game as a partnership.
Yeah, they played very well.
Because I'd always saw in other games, I always thought that the style Celtic played protected Starkville and Carter Vickers, but that game against Rangers, they were asked a lot of questions.
I said that last Thursday's podcast. You're gonna go. It's gonna be hard to find a better performance by just about anybody this season in a Scottish top flight game than Carter Vickers that game.
I was talking to Ewan about this off air. Just like, it's massive for Van Bronckhorst those last two Old Firm games, because if he's going into next season and Rangers haven't won in four, and that would have meant three defeats as well, because they would have had to lost the cup. Mm. Like, he would have, like, you're not hiding at nothing then. And this is what we always talk about. Maloney, when he looked back-to-back derbies. Again, it doesn't matter. Sometimes it doesn't matter what the right decision is. It's gone. The fans, it's gone. So, like, you're digging bad money, if you like. And it's just so it's pointless. So this was massive for him. And now, even though Rangers lose the league, they go into next season where there's a bit of confidence and they feel like they can go toe-to-toe. They'll obviously be able to add some players, and there's faith in the manager. And that was, because, I mean, you'd be already thinking, if he'd lost then, you'd be, well, he's probably going to have to go. Because next season, Rangers fans, when he fancy it, and they'll already be getting edged.
Certainly if we'd taken a hiding yesterday, you know, Celtic would have all but won the league, then I think, that probably explains why Van Bronckhorst picked the team he did, because it was probably more important for him than it was for for the club, because, you know, as I said, I think he's gone anyway. So he has made a lot of tweaks to the way we've set up, and even the game yesterday was different from the game in the cup. But considering, you know, going to Celtic Park without a striker and probably just about having the better chances than Celtic, and Celtic knowing that a win would have seen them, you know, seal the league almost and stopping that, I think it's a pretty good day for Van Bronckhorst, if not for Rangers necessarily.
And talking about a player who's in 90 minutes encapsulated them, I think that's, you can say the same for Fashion Sakala. Something like 10 touches to get the ball under control, but then there's one where he's ripping right through the heart. That's a brilliant finish for the goal. Yeah.
It's a great finish.
It's really people talk about the front post thing, it's nonsense. I mean, it was the best place to put it. It got less time to travel the ball, so there's less time for him to set himself, and it shaves the post, so it's perfect. And with Sakala, he's just like, he's a good squad player. He's an impact player. He's what Rangers, it's worth having him around. You just don't want to be over-reliant on Sakala. Yeah.
He's one of these guys, he's inconsistent, but he's inconsistent within games. It's not even just, you know, from one game to the next. That's just what he is. But I think his output's been pretty good considering the minutes he's had. And I think it would be good if he played more often. I think you'd get quite a lot out of him. But you'll have some very frustrating moments. I mean, I wouldn't blame him too much for the chance he missed at the end, because again, I think that was almost perfect. You know, he does it at the inside of the post. So I think more times than not, a player would miss that chance. So he came pretty much as close as you could to scoring it without scoring. So, first half he was horrendous. Second half, he was generally pretty good.
He was dangerous player in the second
And he, you know, he is quite good in the air as well. He had a couple of decent headers.
Bizarre player. I love players like that, though. Just when you can't put your finger on them, and you hear people all calling him shite, then he does things to shut them up quite regularly. You know, so it's like, just nobody, you can never put your finger exactly what he does.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll just, I think, there's a few players in that, in the category where I think Van Bronckhorst has probably seen enough now that he knows he can rely on them to some extent next season. So I would, like, Bassey, for example, is a guy that Van Bronckhorst deserves a lot of credit for the way he's brought him through and developed him in two different positions. Lundstrom's another one where he sort of now would appear to be the cornerstone of the midfield.
Which you'd never have guessed under Gerrard. I just thought he was the most pointless signing for a Rangers. Just wasn't a Rangers player. Yeah. Doesn't mean he's shit. Just never thought he was a Rangers player at all.
Yeah, he didn't fit the way the midfield was set up before, but he's another one. And then I would say, you know, Sakala less so than the other two, but is one where I think, you know, Van Bronckhorst must be looking at him and thinking, well, you know, he's definitely one of my, you know, maybe the fourth of my ideal front three. You know, the maybe he's the first sub, but he's a guy that, you know, they can think we'll play a lot of minutes next season. So things to build on for next season, but this one is done.
Right, it's not, this season is not done for St Johnstone.
because they are very likely heading into the Premiership playoffs. They were beaten 1-0 at home by St Mirren at the weekend. St Mirren, who have only won one game since Stephen Robinson came into charge. That was away to Dundee. They've now done the same and beaten the other undoubtedly worst team in the league. St Mirren were on a dreadful run as well. They also hadn't scored, I think, in the last seven visits to McDermott Park previous to this. But I've got another stat for you guys.
Oh, I'm excited.
Go for it. 37. Callum Davidson has been in charge for 37 games at McDermott Park during his Johnson tenure. You want to have a guess at how many goals Johnson have scored in those 37 games?
21.
23.
Oof. I was going to say 30. Mm-hmm. So that is...
boring.
It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. Yeah. But in this game, at the very least, he moved away from the three in the back. Finally. Not that it helped him at all, but he did in the second half when they went a goal behind. He made a change going 4-4-2. When you're finally doing it in the fourth last game of the season, when you really need a victory, really, to try and avoid the relegation playoffs, and that's you finally changing things at a flat back four. Desperation much?
Yeah, just screams at you in every bit. They were fucking rank. As well, I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of football over the weekend. I was painting a bloody room on Saturday, which I would advise don't do, not when the football's on. I went to the pub yesterday, so I've been just trying my best to get my work done. But I finished early, and then sort of watched this game back, and what a mistake! it's an absolutely fucking massive game at home, and. Like the only thing that they'd done, St Johnstone, that was like showed that they were up for it was be a bit dirty at times. Like the back three all started taking bodies at different parts of the game, and they were enjoying McCart and Main were at it quite frequently.
I thought McCart should have been sent off for the stamp at the
end. Yeah, he stood over. Yeah. So that was the only thing that let you know that they were kind of up for it, but like there was no energy in their play. It was slow. I thought the decision to play Rooney at right centre back. Bonkers at this, and it shows.
Well, they changed it against Dundee because who was it they had? So they had Rooney at right. Aye, so they took Cleary off. So they played. Mm. Aye, but that was against Dundee. It was kind of worked because Rooney then charged forward from right side and centre back. So you had the two players, you had Sang as well alongside them. So you had a bit of a kind of overload there potentially going down the flank. But for what what I read about this, whenever Rooney went forward. Sang just tucked in, so they weren't even getting that.
No, because I thought Sang was quite poor, and he was like stretching the pitch, but then he would come in, and there was no dovetailing between the two of them in there, and Sang's delivery was hopeless whenever they got the chance, and the fact that just that it was right after the goal they changed it, and then Rooney's getting moved at a right back slot, which gives him more of an opportunity to use his attributes. And I was just like, so now you're chasing a game, you're going to something that you know works, you've got so little weapons at St Johnstone. Then you sort of nullify one of the few weapons you have. I just didn't understand what the point was to do that. St Mirren, on the line, obviously I panned Robinson last week and I've been quite enjoying doing that most Mondays I've been on. They were pretty good, St Mirren. Mm. I quite enjoy. He likes playing Ronan in the sort of deeper role. And I've spoken at length about Ronan on quite a lot of podcasts, but he was really good, and I love the fact that he can impact the game in whatever role you play him in. So he's playing that sort of quarterbacky role, and he can play the long searching balls. He knows when to quicken up and when to slow the game down. He's a really intelligent player, and that's on top of the sort of highlight reel type of thing that we all see. And I'm now going towards the Scottish football's Kevin De Bruyne. Conor Ronan, which you know is a favourite thing of mine to give you a Scottish football version of a top quality player. But,
we'll get into Alex Gogic as well. Well, Gogic, he was like the Scottish football Lothar Matthäus. I mean, he was just strolling about taking free kicks. I was like, what? Who is this? That's not Alex Gogic that I know and don't rate.
That was bonkers when he took. Actually, I was watching the first thing. I actually messaged Fowler privately. Why is Alex Gogic taking free kicks? Well, you've got Ronan there, for example. Like, I know Ronan's not, and like he takes most of their dead balls. They've got a dead ball situation in a great position. And Gogic, I couldn't believe why he was even running the ball, because if you're in the defence, you wouldn't even think of Gogic as a decoy. Because you would think, well, obviously he's not fucking taking it. Yeah. But then he did. And he just hit it directly to the wall. and then he actually nearly scored.
Yeah.
When he got, but actually Gogic was really good in this game.
And so was Curtis Wayne.
Yeah, Curtis Wayne was the, but obviously the battering rams.
A broken clock. I'd like to withdraw Liam Gordon from my top 12 centre backs list, and I think I speak for Joe when he would like to withdraw Jamie McCart from his. Because if you're getting bullied by Curtis Wayne, let's just stop that career right now.
He was.
I gave Stephen Robinson the chance to say, a lot of people have been complaining about Curtis Wayne being in the team, but look, like, well, exactly. I mean, he's been pish for weeks, mate. Seasons.
And when we say good, it was more that he was like a handful. I love watching Curtis Wayne because there's so little quality, but there's loads of endeavour and there's loads of aggression. So it's like always just watching like a madman playing football. Like, it's like that shit player that comes at fives who really, really tries their arse off. Gogic was really good. He was creating his pass for the goal was good. I mean, the decision of Pirini centre back, we mentioned that, actually cost him the game because he fucks up for the goal. He's in a terrible position. And Gogic plays it. And Gogic also played the pass for the early chance that Grieve got. And it's funny watching Gogic plays football. I've been thinking about this. Gogic plays football like you know how kids play in 11-a-sides when it's like really, really young, where he always wants to play that hooked ball. So right, he doesn't want to take a touch. He always just wants to hook the ball forward. He never wants to be on the ball for too long. And whenever he gets a chance to do a skill, and I'm using inverted commas here, it's always the most pointless, boring moment. He does like a back heel when there's a guy 1 yard away from him. And there's no point in doing it, but he does it because he obviously just wants to try and enjoy himself. But he was really good. I quite liked the, strangely enough, they played quite good football during the game, St. Men, and Ronan was the main reason that he brought a lot of control. And the balance between Ronan, Gogic and Kilty was really good, but it's strange because they've taken Erhon out of the team, who's like a really nice footballer, and replaced him with Gogic, and the balance and the quality of the football went up from the Hibs game. So when they're enjoying this, the Joe Shaughnessy long throw was very apparent during this game. They were using it a lot, but always makes you laugh because anyone else have the long throw, because you really want Shaughnessy to be the aggressor in the box for that long throw, but you can't have it all. You can't have it all, I suppose.
I thought it was for you, and I thought you were going to say something.
There's nothing else to say about this.
Greaves, a very willing player. He's very enthusiastic.
Yeah,
and I don't mean that in the damn.
The fans do seem to like him.
In the damn faint praise, because he stretches it a lot, he's not a really quality footballer, but he's quite composed at the right time. So, like for the goal, for example, he actually takes his time and pass it across. And some of the goals he's scored, it's like. They're decent finishes, and he's quite calm in that area, but he doesn't have a lot of quality, so he's a good squad striker for St. Mirren and a half, but you definitely don't want him being you don't want Main and Grieve being running the front two next season.
When Greg Kilty scored and he was like running towards, I thought he was running towards Stephen Robinson. I was like, oh, this is going to be a show of unity with the manager. No, he stopped short of going.
I almost looked like was he running like to the St. Johnson bench to have a go at them, but then it looked too friendly for that, but then he did stop, so I was like, because I thought he's surely not running towards Stephen Robinson, who's basically been calling him a prick. Reading between the lines, you know, the whole squad has been doing that for the last few weeks. So I was surprised by that, but I don't know. Maybe it's a kit man or something.
He said, you should play the day.
Perhaps.
Right, Nadir Shifty. Do something. Try.
Get sent off. Someone.
Yeah.
He doesn't even care enough now to bother doing any of that.
I know, it's just so boring. It's such a shit. You bring Gumby back, you're like, here we go. At least there'll be some box office. He's done fuck all. He doesn't try moping about.
The most notable thing he's done during his Johnson career is trip over Michael O'Halloran when he was trying to catch Barry Mackay in the defeat of Hearts, which I think was his debut.
That was very good, though.
That was quite funny. Yeah. Right, let's move on. I'm into another 1-0 game. God. Aberdeen will 1 Dundee 0. This means that Aberdeen are now pretty much safe from relegation, and Dundee, I mean, they've still got a chance, I suppose, to maybe catch St Johnson, because it just seems like Johnson on him could have picked up any points to now and then the season. But Dundee, again, I mean, the kind of, we were exactly right in writing off Dundee, and also nearly wrong, because the last 2 weeks they could have a wee bit more better finishing, a wee bit more kind of taking their chances when they're on top. Like, they could have had 6 points, but they've instead only got one because they didn't take their chances in the first half in this one, and they were eventually beaten by a Lewis Ferguson penalty.
Yeah. I think they've got the biggest sort of glass jaw in the league, Dundee. Mm. Like, they can play well in spells, and I think other teams probably look worse than them for a lot of games, but they're weak. They're really weak, and they find ways to concede goals, and they find ways not to score
wonderful
goals.
Ways, yeah.
They almost found a new way by conceding straight from kickoff in this game. Anyways, by that killer. They're the worst team in the league ultimately, which is some going considering how bad St. John's
are. A lot of the teams are. Honestly.
Yeah. So fair play to them for that. But yeah, I think the McGeevolution is run aground.
Well, so. Speaking of Mark McGee, last week he talked about radiators, fasting and nakedness.
Oh. Yep.
And this week he had more strange things to say because he substituted Charlie Adam in the 52nd minute?
Yeah.
52nd minute. And Charlie Adam was not happy. He was asked about after the game, why did you take off Charlie Adam? Mark McGee says, you're going to have to ask Charlie Adam about that. And then he then immediately says, but it was a tactical decision. Well then, how would... Charlie Adam, why would he be? Why would he have the answer for that? And then he went on to say, but he's only one player. So he's only a player. We took him off. It was our decision. But hang on, why do we need to ask Charlie?
Also, at the start, he also said it was none of your business. They're like, what? That can't be a response to none of your business, mate. You're a football manager whose job's to come out and answer a question. Now you can say you don't want to answer something, but it's certainly the fans' business. Because this is your chance to talk to the fans. You can't say it's none of their business. No, none of your business. You seem to get
Yeah, he's some man. But Dundee started pretty well. Aberdeen started, apart from Ferguson's halfway line effort, started horrendously. Uh-huh. Still trying to play out from the back when they can't do it. With Bates and Gallagher,
they two are rubbish.
They are.
Yeah.
Seems crazy that Gallagher sort of played well to get us to the Euros. Eh?
Mitch in his back pocket.
Imagine watching those two this season and thinking that one of them had the better of the other in a game that was so crucial to each other. I mean,
Mitch has got 41 goals.
Unbelievable. Need to get Declan Gallagher down to the Championship and finally stop Fulham getting promoted.
Well, fucking Scott McKenna looks the fucking best player in the world there, so maybe.
Do you see that skill? Incredible. Aberdeen, I didn't think started well at all. Playing Ramirez off Watkins, which...
Ramirez is basically down tools anyway. Yeah. Ramirez has not kicked his arse since, like, January. The chat is that he wants to go back to America. His family's still over there, and he wants to
just
go back.
Did you see his wife's Instagram post?
Basically, like, it's almost
that she, that a lot of Americans don't realise how good they've got it, and I mean, to be fair, she has been living in Aberdeen, so I have every sympathy with her.
My mate Roy lived in Aberdeen for like a year and basically turned into an alcoholic because he hated the city that much.
There is to do in Aberdeen is drink. There's plenty of fucking pubs. Like, I mean, that's all there is, though.
Yeah, horrendous place.
It's like good for an away day as a football fan because all it is pubs, but then you're like, I wouldn't want to actually live there.
Yeah.
Apologies to anybody who's listening from Aberdeen
I do apologise.
Who likes their city.
You're wrong. Yeah, come on, wrong.
And they also don't like it.
No. You're wrong. You should come down here. It's lovely.
You can see that in terms of like Aberdeen, like you were talking last week, Goodwin tried to make a point about the players and it instantly went back on and Ramsey was back in, Ramirez was back in. We do generally now they've got the win. We'll never see those two again, I think.
That'll probably be it.
But Ramirez was taken off after 68 minutes for Teddy Jenks.
I forgot about him.
Tells a lot.
Theodore Jenks.
Look at the team though. It's like, I know they've got shit defenders and they've got a forward that doesn't care anymore, but they still like look at the talent in the side and think, why are you so pish every week?
Yeah, but there aren't. I mean, if you look at Lewis, not good enough for Aberdeen anymore. Ramsey, good player, but maybe his head's been turned. Gallagher and Bates are bad. McKenzie's not good enough for Aberdeen either.
Well, McKenzie's probably their best player.
His second win as an Aberdeen player for starting the season. No joke.
Jack McKenzie.
And that other one was that the goal he scored against Strijek, probably when he chucked the goal in.
That can't be right. Because he started the first game of the season against Dundee United, the one that.
I'll get the actual start up. It was Mr. Craig Anderson.
You wouldn't be casting aspersions on.
No, no, it must be true then.
Yeah.
Maybe I've got it like slightly wrong. So I mean, use chat around, but definitely.
Okay, I suppose Hayes as well is maybe a bit past it.
Yeah. So, no, again, he played well.
He played well as well. Just naming all the guys who actually.
Yeah, but I mean, I know that a lot of Aberdeen fans have some consternation about him getting a new contract when he's probably doesn't really or hasn't done enough and doesn't look like he's going to improve from this point. So yeah, I mean, I think they've got a lot to do, Aberdeen. I mean, I suppose this result will give Goodwin the sort of headspace to build his own team, which would appear to be St Mirren, given the transfer rumours. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, signing players from one of the few teams which is probably equally as bad as Aberdeen in the league, I don't know if that'll work out, but good luck to them. I don't mean that.
Sorry, we've not got the stat yet.
No, look, I can't find it anymore. I'm just going to ask Craig Anderson outright, and then a random point during this podcast, I'll just blur it out.
It didn't sound right to me, but...
Maybe he said, apart from the opening day of the season, that's only second win. I think it was something like that.
I'll just say three then.
Yeah, I mean...
It's still a good stat.
It is. I'm not a stats guy, as you're seeing right now.
Yeah. Right, let's. Have we got anything else to say, Dundee? Or Dundee just still don't. Like, we kind of thought in January, and he looked good initially. That Zach Ruddham was going to quite possibly be the kind of goal scorer and a kind of better all round type of player than Cummins and latter day Griffiths was going to be that would kind of help fire Dundee. He's not looked good at this level.
Fucking great though, Lee Griffiths. He's went down to Falkirk in League One and he's still shit.
Yeah.
So shit.
You have to retire.
Yeah.
Darvel
Juniors. We'll give him a good.
Oh, that'd be good.
Actually, Bonnie Rigg's too hot, so where else could he go?
Oh, it has to be Junior. I mean, like, Kelty, Hearts, no.
Nah, Hearts. Can't go to Trident either, Hearts.
Yeah. No, he's
taking over. Fuck off.
But Ruddon, I think.
Try to get a B team in now as well. You're fucking everywhere. Fucking, ugh.
I know a Plymouth Argyle fan, and Ruddon went down there after he'd done really well at Falkirk, and he went on loan to Plymouth from Rangers at the time, and apparently was absolutely horrendous at Plymouth. And they were like, oh, you know, Ryan Hardy, who they've got now, is like so much better. And you wouldn't have necessarily said that. Yeah. You would have maybe said in Scotland, Scottish football, they look about similar-ish players, albeit Ruddon's not done it at all in the top flight yet. But I do wonder if it's maybe he is just a Scottish Championship striker and that's it for Ruddon.
Well, we'll find out next season.
He's tearing up. I mean, wonder what... I think Charlie Adam will call it a day at the end of the season.
I mean, he never seems to be able to last 90 minutes, which is an issue, especially when their team's pretty much built around them. He maybe should, but maybe going back to the Championship one more year.
Because then call it quits when they get them back. Because I thought he might have done that. Like, I think he wanted to, if they stayed, maybe what might keep him is that he doesn't want to finish on a low.
But he wanted to play in front of fans as well, like last season. Right, let's move on. Dundee United 1, Motherwell 0. This means that United are very much in the driving seat for a European place, and Motherwell looks like they're going to be the ones on the outside looking in unless they can beat Ross County in I think, I'm trying to remember when that game was, that next week or a couple weeks time, can't remember. But yeah, so another game at Tannadice, another game that wasn't very good, but decided by Dylan Levitt goal, who was probably the best player in the park.
He is
quite good.
Yeah, he's a lovely wee player. He's really good to watch. What's his contract situation?
He's on loan.
He is on loan for
Man United, but I don't know how many years he's got left. Let me just check.
I'm not sure.
This is an English podcast. Be like, get him back, you can get a game for Man United.
Actually, probably would. But I don't think Ten Hag would necessarily be building the team around him. But now he's a good player. I mean, I suspect this will be the last we see of him in Scotland. I think he'll probably get a sort of decent move.
He's out of contract in the summer.
Was he? At Man United?
I think it was like with Hearts.
If I'm Hibs, Hearts, Aberdeen, I'm knocking on his door, like speaking to his agent.
Honestly, if Hearts sign Dylan, even if Peter Haring goes, which I'll be very sad about, and it still wouldn't be quite a replacement, but if Peter Haring goes and we sign Dylan Levitt and Conor Ronan, I'd be pretty happy.
No, thank you. Too good to have them all. I see Dundee United. I was mentioning last week that I said you can see the clear holes in their team. Yeah. And I quite like, I'd be a little bit excited if they can get the recruitment right.
They get some wingers who are any good.
Then I think there's a lot to work with there. And while I'm not a Tam Courts fan, All right, and I know that, and it's one of those that I don't really have any reason. I'm not normally like this, but I don't really have any reason for not liking Tam Courts. I just don't like them.
I don't think a lot of, despite the fact they've done better than last season, and there was a fear that they were going to be absolutely hopeless on the courts. Still, a lot of fans don't really like him. Don't really like the.
He just doesn't come. He's one of those. It's all the. It's like very like sort of manager speak.
You're just trying to be a proper football man, Tony. Yeah. That's it. He's too new age for you.
Maybe. Yeah, I think that. I think that is what it is, and it does in the way he talks. I feel like he's talking down to you a lot, and always as I've always said, I feel like he's all everything scripted, like that. That Rangers coach with the hairdo. That was on Twitter last week.
Cameron Campbell.
And he was speaking the same, and I was starting to think, is all young Scottish managers all now all just going to be like courts, where it is like all the buzzwords are coming out?
It is like them, sort of, they've all like practiced their post-match interviews in the mirror, bathroom mirror with their toothbrush type thing. I mean, there's an element of that.
It stops me. Like, I don't. It's not that you obviously want to be good at public speaking, et cetera, et cetera, but you want to see a bit of emotion, and I don't mind them taking a second and a little air, because they're not meant to be like running like sort of public speakers and running a huge business or whatever. Yeah. So it starts to move away. I think it's too well thought out. They're spending too much time on that part. I don't know. It's totally just a matter of opinion, really. Right? It's me being ridiculous, frankly, but it's just how I feel. Yeah. But I think. Because you see the little bits, you know, like for the goal, it's really well worked. And you've seen it against Hearts. And you see it occasionally for the United with the nice one-touch football. And it's good. And I'm starting to think that maybe that shows that Tam Courts is a little bit smart. Because, like, I'll use Maloney as an example. He was trying to implement something too quickly. And he didn't have the time to do it. And I feel like Courts is trying to slowly morph the team into playing this style. And it's not constant. And he's not sort of arrogant enough to think he can do it quickly. It's been quite thought through. Mm-hmm. I think maybe over time, if he gets the right players and into next season, they might get better and better, and you'll start to see them playing like quite a nice team on the eye.
I don't know if this is actually reflected in fan sentiment, but I would say Dundee United, of all Scottish clubs, out with Celtic, maybe Rangers, you could say, and Hearts, they should be the happiest, not only because they're fourth in the league, but also because of expectations, how they've done. They're the only club that appointed sort of a progressive, in inverted commas, manager, replacing an experienced, in inverted commas, manager, and it's actually worked this season. You know, Aberdeen tried
they are still
tried
better.
And they're better than
they were. They're definitely better to watch.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't get any worse.
And he's also playing a lot of young players. There's improvements going on there. They've made money already on the boy Smith that went to Aston Villa. There'll be more. Ross Graham's really developed into looks like a good player. Mikkelsen played well in this game as well. So they've got good young players coming through as well. So they'll have to replace Seagrass probably in the summer. He's not been tremendous lately, I think, as we were talking about last week. But so there's a few they do still need a few bits, but I would say they've probably got the most to be optimistic about.
You can see progress, and you can see what they're going to try and do. He's given, maybe with Courts, he gives a bit, like the young players seem to really sort of react well to him. It kind of bit like Brendan Rodgers, where for the outside you're a bit like, look,
it's a bit cringy,
but then it seems that like footballers, and especially young footballers, seem to relate to him a bit. So maybe that's going to be Tam Court's thing.
The 3-4-3 was quite interesting from Motherwell's perspective. It was Ryan Tierney who went up front without Keith Van Veen, who was suspended, I think.
Keith Van Veen.
I've done it again. I've done that long.
It's Ross Tierney and Kevin Van Veen, and you've got both them wrong.
It's Ryan Tierney.
I think you called him Ryan Tierney last week as well.
Ross Tierney.
Twice I had to intervene that day.
Thank God you're here.
Yes, Ross Tierney and Kevin have come because of Keith Van Veen.
How could the name How could the surname Van Veen have the first name Keith? It just doesn't work at all.
So without Big Keith up front,
you're old man.
Young Ryan had to come in. But Ross Tierney was Motherwell's best player. He had a good game. Was unlucky not to score. There was other parts of the 3-4-3 I thought were a bit curious. Jake Carroll is a left wing back. Jake Carroll's not very good. I'm a bigger fan of Carroll than I think most Motherwell fans are. I think he's a decent defensive fullback, but he's not very good going forward.
He's got a bit of momentum though. When Carroll gets going, he's one of those players he's always trying to cross on the move. I always see he's always running at full pelt. He's got a decent, then he tries to put a cross. That's very difficult to do.
I think he's got a decent shot on him as well.
He's a powerful player.
And O'Hara at right wing back, I could kind of see that as well. But I didn't really like Goss and Slattery together in the middle because Goss doesn't do enough work to be a member of a midfield two. But to be fair, they were the better team in the first half. But then things started going wrong in the second half when he made subs like bringing on Joe Efford, which just a thing that shouldn't happen. Then for the last 10 minutes, the old tactic of a manager who really doesn't have many ideas. Stick Bevis McGarvey up front.
Yes.
Or in fact, actually, put him in the left wing, which is really where they put him.
Just keep him away from your own goal. It's probably a good idea. I think Tierney might be a bit of a breakout player next season. Mm-hmm. I think he does look good.
He's got something about him.
Like, has he got a loan? Does his loan go on for longer at Motherwell? Is it one of those ones?
I think he's permanent from Bohemians. Did they sign him from?
Yeah, I think so. Let me just
double check that. So I follow a few guys on Twitter who are Bohemian fans.
I've typed in Ryan again. Ryan Tierney plays for Stenhouse Muir, by the way. I don't know why. That's the player I'm getting mixed up with.
But they rated him quite highly, and I think he is a permanent deal.
That's cool.
They're pretty good. So I think he's got something about him. And
3.5-year deal he signed in January.
It was Bohemians he was from, wasn't it? They signed him from.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
That's looking like good business. I mean, he's strangely good in the air. Yeah. Every time I watch, he's a really good header last week.
And he almost scored with one this week. So I think he might play wide more often than through the middle, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think it was a needs must thing, but also showed that Motherwell did not replace Tony Watt. And this is why they're not easily, because it really could have been easily fourth had they replaced Tony Watt sufficiently. Yeah. Or, as I've said all along, just hold on to him.
Yeah.
So what did he gain? You know,
I don't know what either of them gained. Yeah. I don't know anyone gained on it, if anything.
Maybe then he's only scored once.
There's
a lot of work to do. I would be of the opinion I'd be wanting to part ways with Alexander in the summer. Every
Motherwell fan.
Not make a scene.
One clean sheet in 16 games. If that Motherwell team, which is not good to watch, if it's not even solid, then what's the point?
Because he'll be the kind of guy, you'll be hearing him when he goes away talking about, I got them in the top six, what do they expect? I bet you'll get these sound bites for Alexander, but like totally taking away any context or any nuance at all from it.
Speaking of what's the point, Livingston 1, Hibs 0.
Joel wrote a nice article about when Martindale, that was quite interesting, Martindale, because Martindale talks quite openly about tactics. I mean, we were talking about this earlier, just off air. I quite like it. He treats the football fans with respect, Martindale, and he talks like you understand that you've got the depth of understanding of what he's talking about, and he's one of the very few managers that's actually able to do it, and that tells you that it's someone who's firstly comfortable in his skin. And I think it also speaks about like his past. Like he's happy where he is, and he's happy to be quite open. Mm-hmm. And even when he was talking about like, would you take the Hibs job, for example, he was like, maybe not. I think he's someone who's, everything that he's been through as a person, he's probably kind of quite happy with his lot. He's like, my wife has totally turned around, and where I've got is quite unbelievable, really, considering about the background.
And he did say about the Hibs job kind of thing, it's one of those ones where he feels, I think he's got such a back in Livingston that even if they were to go down, he would probably keep his job kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas, as he was kind of saying about the Hibs thing, it's just so mad, like, in terms of football management. And he wants to be, and he said that himself. He says, I mean, we all kind of presumed the reason why it took so long for him to be the manager of the team when he was basically the manager already was to do with his past and whether that was going to be a problem. But as he said it, and I mean, can't really, you know, accuse him of anything else. He says that he was hesitant to do it because he didn't, with the role he had behind the scenes as like head of recruitment or whatever his previous role was, I think that's what it was officially, that he had a job that had a bit of security for him. Whereas if you're a manager, you really have no job security. He does at Livingston, and that's why it's good to stay there. But if he was to go at Hibs, I mean, Maloney only got 19 games.
And it's one of those, if he goes, also a guy like that, I think actually at Hibs, I wouldn't be against it, but I think I don't think it would work. I think his pass would get dredged up. Yeah. I think the fact that he's a bit of a Ouija chav, and I don't mean this in a bad way. Please, I'm a chav. I mean, I grew up in Pillin. I mean, there's nothing. But I think that would work against him at a club like Hibs with that background. The minute people wouldn't like it, people wouldn't be the type of guy who should be the Hibs manager, you know, that I think there'd be that snobbery about it. Not from me, but that, and that would put him on the back. And again, this is something I talk about. It's not always about what's right or wrong or what's fair. It's about what would work.
Yeah.
And I think that with Hibs, he would be on the back foot right away. People wouldn't take to him right away. And again, but Livingston, he's got the right setup. And if I was him, maybe just fucking be the Livingston manager for like 20 years.
Yep. I think it's well in his interest just to stay where he is, to be honest. I mean, these things do get, you know, not to compare the because they're not remotely similar, but you saw with Goodwill, you can be somewhere and everyone's quite happy with you there, and then as soon as you move, that's everything does get dragged up. I mean, I think Martindale is in a much better position than that, because people don't have the strength of feeling, rightly so. And
he's obviously been apologised properly.
Exactly. Completely different personality and all that. But it would, I think you could probably put Malky Mackay into that category as well. Someone that would be probably well advised not to take a move. Because I think a lot of things would then get brought back up that you probably rather weren't. I think he's obviously done a cracking job at Livingston.
And he spoke quite freely at the end of the game about how happy he is and how excited he has got next season, because he feels like he's got a core of a group, unlike that he's had other years where he's had to sign 8, 9, 10 players. If I was Livingston, I'd really like to hear that from a guy like Martindale, because he's going to add a couple of players, and then I reckon they could be a challenge. They could be like a bit of a, what's the word? They challenging for the top six next season.
And fair play to them, because I've made fun of it before, but Sean Kelly had a good game in the middle of the park. he seems to have played well when he's the more deeper of the midfield, or which he was against Hibs, when he's kind of been pushed forward alongside like either Pittman or whoever's been the more kind of forward player. If he's not at the base of the three, he seems to have struggled a bit more. But as a defensive midfielder, he seems to be all right, which is weird, wild. The guy who, when they signed, were like, well, why? And then, and also when he played centre half fell in the season.
Why?
Yeah.
I wonder how much of that optimism is because of Nubly. Because he's not like been amazing since he's come back.
He's not scored.
But I thought he looked really good
in this game. Good.
If I was a Livingston fan, I would be really optimistic that he's going to have a cracking season next season.
Yeah, and also this was the full debut, because he's played a few times but only off the bench, of Morgan Boyles, who they signed, a young left back who they signed for Liverpool this season. I think he's maybe about the 17th, 18th left back Livingston have used this season. But he had a good game as well, so he's somebody that the Livingston fans are hoping could be another gem that Martindale just pulled from absolutely nowhere.
I mean,
speaking of Nubly as well.
Yeah, and he makes people better as well, like Penrice. Should not have had as good a season as he has.
No, he's not got any talent. These guys don't have talent.
But somehow he gets them and they're functioning really, really well.
Honestly, when you look at like the advanced stats for stuff, because I do it for every single Livingston player is always terrible. Every advanced stat, basically, and then they go out on Saturday and they just beat the opposition. It's like how?
Because I was to prepare for the last with the TV show that I was on. I was wanting to do Nicky Devlin as the secret sauce, but they were like, no, you're a Hibs fan, do a Hibs player, which is fine. I get it at the time, obviously for the derby and stuff, but this is how I found it. I went on and I was like, because I wanted to go in depth to talk about the guy, and I was checking out that, and I was like, well, he actually looks pish. But then I was like, but with my eyes I watch him and he's really fucking good.
Scott Pittman, by the way, Livingston legend Scott Pittman, congratulations to him on becoming their most I was going to say most capped, that's not a thing, most appearances of any player in the top flight for Livy. Scored the only goal of the game as well. He's been an excellent player for them.
Nice goal.
I don't think I've ever seen somebody who had worse advanced stats than Scott Pittman.
See, you very rarely see a player send keeper the wrong way from open play. That's what he did. That might be down to Matt Macy.
Yeah.
Did make a couple of good saves.
Yeah, he did.
Macy's one of those goalkeepers who can really pull the wool over your eyes. You need to be watching him closely, because he doesn't make sort of really stark errors that are really obvious on the eye. But see when you watch him, it's always slightly slow. It's always like, I think you could have done better. And but you feel like that a lot about him. And then obviously his kicking is the worst in the league. How someone can go and train in football every single day, but not be able to like pass it, like even in the most basic form, is baffling to me. Practice, like practice. You go there, but
sorry, we should talk about Hibs before we move on. Actually, I don't really have much.
He's talking about Macy, not talking about
him. I don't really have much notes on Hibs actually, but I've just got one of them. James Scott back to being terrible.
Oh, he's fucking garbage, man.
Talk about top 12s. Paul Hanlon was in your top 12 centre halves. Is he where he just bounced off Nibley completely? Just fell on his arse.
I was going to bring this up because since Hanlon's come back, Benji's been fucking dreadful. He's been bad. And I'm normally a bit of a defender of Hanlon, but God, he's just getting bullied by people week in, week out, and he's spending large periods on his arse, which isn't good. Because you know, the Hanlon's, he was always, you always thought, I've always liked him, like Considine, where he was like, not good enough to leave Hibs, but good enough to be at Hibs. Yeah, and I was like, that's quite a good thing to have some players like that. But now, since he's come back there, I'm worried about him for next season. I don't know, if he's going to continue like that, he's not good enough. And and for Hibs, I mean,
we've got this image of Hanlon not being good enough for Hibs anymore. And Ryan Port just being sold, and Hibs starting next season with Rocky Bushiri and Darren McGregor. <in that
partnership. laughs> Lewis Stevenson and Paul McGinn just in centre half. But with Hibs, I mean, Harry Clark again, just instantly coming to the team and just looks our best player. That's just, and I don't think that's not a good thing. And I really rate Clark, but just how much he looks a level above everyone is not good. And Martindale basically talking about the tactics thing about obviously Hibs were getting a lot of joy down the flanks. We put in Clark put in three brilliant balls on the highlights, and only one of them ended in a shot. One, James Scott gets out the way of it. He ducks underneath it. Fuck off, man. He's rubbish. And then, I get this season so far in the bin. And the thing for Hibs, I mean, I'm going to do a podcast, I think, with you about Hibs later on, so I won't go too much to it. But the next thing, I think we're going to have to get, the next match is going to have to be good, because I don't think the behind the scenes stuff is good for anyone. I don't think we're going to have great recruitment or anything from that side of the club. So the next manager's going to have good agent contacts, and he's going to have to get the ones that he does, similar to what Postecoglou done at the start of the season, where he got all of the ones that you know were him, he got all of them right. And Celtic, did get their recruitment was unbelievable. But in general, for Hibs, if you're looking at Muller being what we're bringing out of the recruitment, then you're thinking, right, the manager, what if the manager gets three or four buys next season, they're all going to have to be fucking good. Yeah. He can't have any misses.
So you don't think Kendall Gordon is going to head out?
Oh, Kendall Gordon, that's a good one. I like it. It's my fucking birthday.
Here's another player from Bodoglimt. Fantastic.
Ian Gordon, we were trying to defend him on there. Was it Graham Spears' podcast? I saw a little clip from it, and they were talking to someone at Hibs, I can't remember who it was, and they mentioned Ian Gordon. We could hear him try, was he involved in football? Oh yeah. He was at he'd done a year at Charleston Battery. The answer is no, he wasn't involved.
Not even the MLS.
Patrick McPartlin. It was him that was on Spears' podcast talking about Hibs. Obviously he's the main guy that's in terms of journalism to the club. And he was obviously trying to defend it, as you do in that position, I get it. You're trying with that, you're really, really having to work hard here.
Aye, Patrick's a lot better at playing that political game than I am.
I can imagine.
I think Spears asked me, I would have just laughed. No.
See, it's Rod Gordon's son. this is why you need your podcast, Craig.
I need to get this stuff out.
What about Graham Spears' idea of Mark Warburton as Hibs manager?
And then last week it was Malcolm McKay, and there was no debate. And then a week later, he stayed in debate. It's client journalism,
I agreed with Duncan's point that there's maybe a bit too much history and baggage between the kind of Hibs and Warburton kind of thing. Fans would just kind of be against him at the start. It never really works out, but I think he'd be an excellent hire.
It's a bit for me, a lot of Hibs fans still think James Tavernier's dreadful because of that cup final, and that's maybe the only game
6 years ago.
They've not paid attention to any football that's happened since then. I think Warburton would actually be good.
I
can understand why you would.
I wouldn't be against Warburton. I think because I actually like the football Warburton plays. I think it would suit sort of the Hibs fans, the perception of themselves and what they say the club's about. I think Warburton could be good. Obviously, Mowbray's now being linked as well. I mean, you can't, people are, you can't really turn your nose up at like top end championship managers if they're willing to to come. But I do think the Warburton one, it would, again, it's just if it goes wrong for one minute, then everyone's on him. And I mean, he's got a club and they've literally got a song slagging him off that's aired quite regularly.
He wears a fanny hat.
I mean, I don't know what that is. A minge on his head. I don't know. But it's a good song and it's fun. But yeah, so it'll be really interesting. Like I said, they're going to have to get their part of the recruitment really right. Mm-hmm.
So Tony, you talked about enjoying your football at Easter Road. Nobody enjoyed the football at Tynecastle on Saturday, as Hearts drew 0-0 with Ross County in a game that absolutely screamed end of season pish vibes. County had something to play for. They're still trying to get in Europe. It was, I thought Hearts the first five. I thought first 5 minutes, I thought they were the team that came out the traps a bit better. But then I think immediately it was so obvious that the crowd was flat, flatter than a pancake. And that just filtered down to the players. And County were the better side for the next 20 to 25 minutes. Hearts picked things up again a little bit before the half. Definitely the better team in the second half, where I felt there was a bit of a mistake for Nielsen in terms of his selection. I didn't so much mind him changing away for the three at the back to go back to the four at the back, because he tends to like to do that against, to kind of match up with the opposition. And
where was Woodburn playing?
He was in the centre of the park.
Ah, so he was like playing in the double pivot type thing.
Yeah, but it was pretty much played a 4-4-2 from the start. Mm. Mackay was just as a number 10 with Boyce up top.
Just off him, right, okay.
And Woodburn actually played quite well, I thought.
I've never seen him in that. He's never played that specific role.
Played against Dundee United.
Right, okay.
But yeah, that's the only time. So maybe if we want to keep Woodburn, maybe just use him as a centre midfielder next year, because he's still quite good on the ball and stuff. It's just the fact that as a
no output as a
he's been good. He's been good when he's played as like a he's good when he's played as a false nine. He's been good in that role in the centre as well. But whenever we play him as the kind of one of the wide supporting players, he's just useless. He just doesn't suit the role whatsoever.
So you're thinking maybe Woodburn would be good again. It would have to be quite cheap then. You'd want him because
he is at a contract.
You'd be using him as a.
But I suppose it does depend on his wages. But the spell he's had at us, I don't know how many championship teams would be knocking on the door for him.
You know what I mean? The way you're talking, it seems like he's good for like a tactical player that he can be used to fill gaps maybe rather than like
maybe keep him around the squad.
Yeah,
he can do stuff.
You'd have to be cheap then. Yeah. For that type of player.
He's somebody that could come off, conceivably, he's not really done it much, but he has had moments this season, so he's somebody who could conceivably come off the bench and change a game. He's just not really shown that, but, you know, it's hard to come off the bench and change a game, but he is somebody that does, he has the talent.
Well, don't sign someone to do it.
He has the talent. <You can't. laughs> He has the talent to do it. But I think Hearts got better in the second half when they initially just rearranged things a little bit, put Ginelli through the centre again, put Mackay on the wing and swapped Mackay Stephen over to the other side. And then, because I think in the first half, they really kind of missed a bit of dynamism, really, from the front two in terms of not really having anybody to run the channels and pull the County defence in areas that they didn't want to go. And second half, putting Ginelli in there, that changed that. Then after about 20 minutes, they brought in Sims for him to do it as well, and Ginelli went back to the wing. And Hart should have won the game in the end. Liam Boyce has two great chances. Yeah. One of them, weirdly, wasn't on the SPFL highlights, but was on Sports Scene, thankfully. Where Liam Boyce, usual, one-on-one with a goalie, hits it low right of the goalie. Yeah. Stop doing that!
I find it weird with Liam Boyce because he's a fucking great... I've said this before, I really rate Boyce, like really highly. But he used to be brilliant in front of goal. And now he's added loads and loads to his game. Loads. Like, I mean, he's such a round... He's one of the most rounded players in the league, I think. But now his finishing's got weaker, which I find bizarre. I don't understand how that's happened. Like, he's filled his brain with too much other stuff that he's had to give up more. Surely just add to your game rather than having to like swap.
He said afterwards,
so when you create a wrestler, create a player, and you only get so many like numbers.
Yeah, sliders.
Sliders. And he's had to turn his finishing down.
He said afterwards that he tried to basically play it under Laidlaw, like put it through his legs, but it never looked on. And also, why aim at that? Why not aim at like literally the rest of the goal?
It's Laidlaw as well.
Yeah. So there wasn't much to write home about in this game, I didn't think. But
Peter Haran was very good, probably the best player on the park. Again, just controlling the tempo as usual.
You just love him.
Joel says he talked to him for. Joel was at the PFA Scotland Awards and said he talked to him for about half an hour.
Sponsored table and everything for old Joel Skelly.
And also shook him and told him to sign a new deal. So if Peter Haran leaves before the cup final because he's concerned for his own safety, we know why.
And injures Peter Haran.
Like he's like a newborn. County were, yeah, decent enough.
Three draws they've got against Hearts this season. It's not bad.
The team's only draw, apparently. I think that's now 7 of the last 8, or something like that. 8 of the last 9 games between County and Hearts have ended in draws, and the one earlier this season that wasn't a draw, which Hearts won 2-1 at Tynecastle, should have ended up a draw because Harry Clark had that charge right at the end which hit off Joseph Hungbo, who was standing on the line.
Oh, yeah. I thought the goal there, like the Jordan White goal, was offside. That's one thing about VAR coming in, is like, well, we actually get better camera angles, I presume. I mean, I presume VAR will be based on that because you couldn't tell that. But well, we actually get to see them.
But we're getting VAR light, so I am actually worried about that side of it as well. Like, we're not, like, they're not even going to be that many good cameras. So I'm already against it in its purest, best form. Never mind when it's going to be like watered down.
It's going to be an absolute disaster, and I cannot wait to crow on Twitter about how much of a disaster it is and how I was fucking right all
along. Yeah. Wait until we get a goal wrongly disallowed or wrongly allowed, whatever, and then go for it then, because that was when. Opinions will be
Twitter will most, explode yeah. when oh, VAR comes oh, in at Scottish yeah, the yeah. first Old Firm game I actually might throw my phone at the window.
One thing about County that I don't quite get, I never get why he doesn't play Hungbo and Charles Crook in every single game. He seems to to drop one of them for like the tougher away
games.
They
were at their best when they played both of them.
I really rate Hungbo. I mean, I think obviously Charles Crook had a better season overall, but I think Hungbo will have the better career. I think he's really talented.
Charles Cook's already come back down to earth, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has a bit.
He's not quite to the level of last season. He still looks like a good player, but I would be scared about signing him.
I do think probably the team that ends up signing him, if he stays in Scotland, which he might not, but it'll either be presumably Hearts, Hibs or Aberdeen, and there's a good chance that the one that gets him will have the worst season, because they're probably being the stupidest in terms of recruitment, or the laziest. They've just got the guy.
You're signing for Hibs then, sir.
What is Ian Gordon think of? What does Ian Gordon think of him?
But Hungbo, he's Hungbo's powerful, and he's got a low centre of gravity and stuff as well.
What a left foot he's got. Rogic's goal-winning goal of the season when Hungbo scored that free kick from about the halfway line against Dundee, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that should have been goal of the season.
Yeah, because that was really like, that was like a Griffiths one at Tynecastle, like, where it's so far out and it's like, it's like so difficult to score it.
Yeah.
It was like perfect.
Sad, I think he's a good player.
Why is Blair Steen on the tour and go back in? Blair Spittle's playing instead of him.
I know.
Yeah, he didn't do
that. I don't know if it's because they're even towards next season, and Hungbo presumably won't be there. But then, they're still going for Europe. So
Blair Spittle, like, don't get me wrong, I don't hate Blair Spittle. He's like a handy player, I suppose, at times. And he's played them in the midfield, centre mid and stuff now, but he's not as good as Hungbo. Just as simple as that, in a wide role. Yeah. Just play your best team. You're still going for something as well. I mean, why are you preparing for next season when you can still achieve this season?
Right, guys, I think that'll do us. Thank you very much, Ewan.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Tony.
Oh, my pleasure.
And if you'd like to hear more from us, we're about to head over to Patreon to record an episode there. If you'd like to get involved, then please do. That is patreon.com/terracepodcast. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.